The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The post office began doing Sunday deliveries.
I told my boss right away that I wouldn't be able to do that, but I was willing to take other shifts or, you know, even do an extra route when I would come back from my original one.
But eventually, that was not enough for his boss.
My boss was intimidating, kind of aggressively asked me if I was going to work this Sunday or not. He had cornered me out of my car as I was loading outside the post office, and he basically said, the post office is thinking of making an example of you. And so I lived from that point on, you know, in fear that today could be the day that I come to work and they drop the bomb on me that I could be fired.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Great to be here with you this afternoon. I hope you had a wonderful Divine Mercy Sunday and look forward to hanging out with you. That's big news, huh? I want to talk a little bit about that if we could. And maybe tomorrow I'll dive into it in greater details, but as we take a look at working on the Sabbath. I don't know whether you work on Sunday or not. I totally respect the fact if you don't. I know several people who haven't, and I'll tell you the impact it's had on their business. Great story a little bit about that. I'll also tell you about what the Virgin and La Salette had to say about it, too. It's really quite fascinating. And, of course, it's one of the great commandments, right? It's one of the great commandments we have. Tomorrow, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be hearing a case that will have an impact on whether or not employers can require you to work on Sunday. So the backstory here is that there's a man, his name is Gerald Groff, former Protestant missionary, and he returned to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful area. I don't know if you've ever been there. Amish country, really. I've been there many, many, many times. So he wanted a job where he didn't have to work on Sunday. And he thought a job with the post office is going to be perfect, right? But then Amazon started demanding that the post office deliver their packages on Sunday, which meant now that Groff's superiors wanted him to deliver those packages on Sunday. And he says, look, I can't do it. I don't want to do it. You know, I don't work on Sunday. It's a holy day, and I dedicate it to God, and I'm not going to work. And they pushed him, and he says, wait a minute. This is a violation of my First Amendment right to freely practice my religion. So he's seeking to overturn a previous decision that said that the law only imposed a minimum of burden on employees to accommodate religious convictions for their employees. So this is a pretty big story. Where it's going to end up, to be honest with you, I don't know. I do not know. Do you work on Sunday? You know, I got to be honest. I don't come into the network here and broadcast, but I do some work on the Sabbath. I've got one of my producers who really doesn't. If there's breaking news or there's an emergency, yeah, he'll do stuff that we need to get done. But he and his family do respect very much the Sabbath. They try to keep it holy. I don't know about you. There was a friend of mine years ago. She married an Italian guy. They had a great Italian restaurant. This was down in Delaware. And their busiest day of the week was Sunday, right? Well, she had this wonderful conversion, and she decided, you know what? I don't think we should keep our business open on Sunday. And her husband says, honey, what are you, crazy? This is our best day. What are we going to do? You know, our revenue, what's going to happen? You know, we can't close on this day. But she kept at it and kept on him and kept trying to get him to close the business on that day. And he knew it was going to cost them a lot of money because that was, as I said, in terms of revenue, was the best day that they had. But he loved her very much, and he decided after persistence, you know, what Scripture often says about persistence, he says, okay, you want to have it this way? We'll see how it goes. And they close their business on Sunday, right? Their business picked up and boomed. I mean, in fact, it boomed so much that they made more money than they did on that Sunday on days that were super sold. I don't know whether people came on the other days because Sunday it was closed or whether or not God just chose to bless them And I tend to think it is the latter. I think if you truly honor God for the right reason, God will bless you. He really will. And it's hard because, look, the numbers don't add up, do they? If I shut down on my busiest day, you know what our expenses are. Monday's a terrible day already. We're closed on that day or whatever. You know you're going to take a loss. It just doesn't work. It's like giving, right? I often think about charity. You know, when I go and I give money to somebody else, when I give to a cause, a charity, somebody in need, especially if it comes out of your want, out of your need, you really need it, you know, for your own bills or something. You're like, I could really use this. I can't afford to give it. But you still feel called by God. You want to honor God to do that? God always gives back. He honors the sacrifice. It doesn't make sense. If I give, I'm going to have less, but that's never the case because God always returns generosity. Yesterday, I thought it was a great day to do that too because it was the Feast of Divine Mercy. We were called not just to pray and to go receive the Eucharist and get the confession and honor the Lord on that day in which he said the floodgates of his mercy were open, but the Lord also demands deeds of mercy from us. So it was late at night, and I'm going to lose grace for this, but I'm just going to tell it to you anyway, just because I want to encourage you maybe to do the same thing. It's never too late to do this. It's coming to the end of the hour, Mercy. It's like 11 o'clock, 11:30, you know, and I know it was last night. You know, I'd spent all this time in prayer yesterday, and the Lord put on my heart to help somebody who I knew was having financial difficulty. You know, I knew they were working very, very hard. They didn't have a whole lot. I haven't spoken to them in a long time, but the Lord put their name on my heart. So I said, all right, Lord, I could really use this money. I can't really afford to give this right now, but I'm going to do it. And that night, before that day ended, I sent a Venmo out to this particular individual and got a text from them at 3:30 in the morning because they work overnight and just told me what a blessing it was, how they had a big unexpected expense that came into their life just 2 days ago. They didn't really know how they were going to be able to pay for it, but they had it done. And that was the way God worked, right? And you know, am I going to get it back dollar for dollar? I don't know. Maybe God will give it to me in multiples. Maybe God won't give it back to me in terms of, you know, dollar for dollar, cent for cent. Maybe there's going to be a prayer I'm praying for that will get answered. Maybe a new opportunity will open. Maybe even more importantly, maybe I'm building my eternal treasure, right? Isn't that far worth, isn't that far better than anything we can accomplish down here where moth will eat it and rust will devour it, right? We don't take with us what we acquire over here. It turns to dust. Every house you have, all the money in your bank, that all gets left to your next generation. Somebody else will live in your house one day. Somebody else will have your possessions, your artwork. Somebody else will have, you know, your money if you don't spend it all for some reason. You only take with you what you send ahead. And I think acts of charity are that. So on the Feast of Mercy, I wanted to do that. But I don't say that to get credit or grace, but I just want to encourage you to do the same thing. If the Lord speaks to you, if you know somebody's in need or having a difficult moment, I would really encourage you to step out and to help that individual. You will be surprised at how God gives back. I was talking to my 29-year-old son the other day. We had a long car ride together. And I was telling him stories of God's providence in my own life. You know, and how the Lord very vividly, miraculously has come through. And I think if you look back at your own life, and I'm sure you'll see this. You'll see how you can never, ever outgive God. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk more about the Sabbath. It also ties into it. I didn't mean to talk a lot about this, but in 1846, there were a series of apparitions in a small town in the French Alps. One of the most beautiful apparition sites I've ever been to. And it was a period in France that was going between monarchy and the empire. And it was in revolution. The French Revolution, of course, took place in 1789, right? The Reign of Terror. So really, we're on the heels of this. And what took place, there were powerful messages from the Mother of God. One of those, tomorrow I'll tell you more about it, because they dealt with the weather. Future events that we're now seeing. I mean, really bizarre things, trials for the church. But those aside, one of the things that really resonated with me, because Our Lady came in this apparition, it's only one of a few that I've ever known where she appeared weeping. She came in a ball of light and was crying. Tears were streaming down her face. And one of the messages, well, two of them actually, dealt with some of the commandments, right? One was to keep holy the Sabbath. I mean, we act like that's not a big deal not to respect this day, to work on it, to go to our ball games, to not even think about God, to race into church and get out before, you know, the final blessing, you know, roll in late. Do you spend any time in prayer? Do you focus at all on God? But not just that, but also to keep holy the Lord's name. And she warned of future events that would unfold, all of which did, in very vivid detail. But I don't want to go too far down that path. Maybe tomorrow we can dive into that, and I'll unpack that story for you as this postal worker says, hey, I don't want I don't want a violation of my First Amendment rights. I don't want to work on Sunday, and I'm should be able to freely practice my religion. So if this gets passed, and again, we can look at the big picture. What's it mean for employers? When employers are saying, when people are going to the restaurant they work for, sorry, I'm not working on Sunday, right? No, I'm not delivering those packages on Sunday. No, I don't fix those broken heaters on Sunday. You know, no, I'm not going to work at the gas station and keep the pumps open on Sunday. What happens? Right? It's an interesting dilemma. So we'll look at that. Big case tomorrow. Continue to follow it. Here's something I shared with my wife the other day, and I just thought, holy cow, this cannot be true. What a world we are living in. Minnesota's governor recently signed an executive order making it illegal for anyone to take a child who's come to the state for so-called gender transitioning back out of that state. So your kid leaves you, goes to Minnesota, you realize, oh my gosh, they're underage. They're going to go and they're going to go ahead and have a, they're getting help transitioning? No way. You live in a place like Florida that has made it illegal, right? And your child goes to Minnesota where it is now legal, and Minnesota says, nope, you can't have them back. Washington State's going even further than that. Lawmakers there, listen to this. This is a bizarre story. They passed a bill that allows children to legally be taken away from you, the parent, for not consenting to their gender transition procedures on their child. So you got this 14, 15-year-old boy who says, you know, I don't want to be Drew anymore. I want to be Drusilla, and I want to go through, you know, some operations to become Drusilla, right? I don't think that's going to – it wouldn't fly well with me. I'd be breaking down doors to get my son back and getting him the help he needed. But what's happening? Washington State is saying, you know, that your kids can be taken away from you. Well, take them away from you. If your kid says she wants to go and become a him or he wants to become a her, you're not going to consent to their gender transition? You lose custody. Honestly, it's the most bizarre thing I have ever heard. These lawmakers passed that bill. So it's not like it was a, you know, it's not like, oh, no, we got to written it or they present it. No. According to the bill, shelters could contact the Department of Children, Youth, and Families instead of the parents for minors seeking abortions or gender transition procedures and surgeries. Imagine if your daughter was pregnant and you said, we'll raise that baby. Don't abort it. I don't want you to suffer the damage that's going to result in that. And they say, nope. We're going to let your daughter have an abortion. You have nothing to do with it. You have no control. That's exactly what is happening in the state of Washington. It's bizarro world. I mean, it is really bizarro world. I tell you, I prayed my butt off. Let me rephrase it. I prayed my knees off. I was on them all day yesterday, and I was praying for this country because our country desperately needs God. And we desperately need rationality. In fact, you know, I was at this event yesterday for Divine Mercy, and I was really, really blessed to be able to do it because for the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, Relevant Radio has been having a live Divine Mercy event where we pray the chaplet, and Father Rocky and I kind of, you know, I lead the chaplet, Father leads exposition, and he was busy, and they asked me, and I just wanted to, it sounded selfish, but I just wanted to spend the day in prayer. I did. I spent hours in prayer the other day, and I was just so happy. It's my favorite day, really, on the church calendar. And as a result of it, one of the things I prayed for in a big time way was for this country and for families. The priest there said something very powerful. I thought, man, does he listen to the radio show? Because what he said was great. He says, all that we're seeing right now, right? All that's going on in the culture, this attack, he says, on marriage and family. He didn't quote Sister Lucille Dos Santos, who initially said that. She said the final confrontation will be over that. He says, this attack comes from the deceiver, from the author of lies, That is what's behind all this. And I can't see of a more aggressive attack on family than we're seeing today when you've got legislators saying, we're taking away all your parental rights. You're minor. If you still want to have an abortion, we're going to let them have it. You can't get your kid out of our state. And if they want to transition to some other gender and you don't think it's right, you don't think it's in their best interest, too bad. We, the state, do. So I would encourage you to do the same thing. Pray, pray, pray. Oh, let me change gears on something else. You know, when I first joined Relevant Radio years ago, I want to talk about a great bishop that I, great cardinal, really, that I got to know. His name was Cardinal George. I don't know if you're familiar with him. I think today is the 15th anniversary of his death. Some people are saying this man's cause should be open. You know, he was an extraordinary man, and he was a visionary. He really was. How can I say this? There was something very unique, very very special about this man. I guess 8 years ago, somebody's telling me he died. I'll get my next guest, Michael Heinlein, is going to be joining me. And there's a new book out. You may want to check it out on him. If you're not familiar with Cardinal George, he was the former Archbishop of Chicago, but he died of bladder cancer. But his entire life he suffered. And he fought off, you know, early in his tenure in Chicago, this fight with cancer. He was born and raised in Chicago. He battled through polio and left him with a lifelong disability, as well as really changing the trajectory of where he thought his life as a priest would end up. I learned a lot about him just recently. He was the master of several languages. He knew a lot about the global church before he ended up back in the Windy City. And then taking on a church like Chicago was not really an easy feat, but he was able to actually visit every single parish in the archdiocese, something none of his predecessors have ever done. He was, you know, important for the life of this radio apostolate as well. Without him, and I really want to publicly thank him, and I'd ask you to pray for his soul. We wouldn't be on the air talking with you today. I mean, Chicago was one of the very first major markets that Relevant Radio was able to go into, and with his blessing. There's a new book out. There's a biography on him called Glorifying Christ, The Life of Cardinal Francis E. George. And you'll learn about the sacrifice of this man early in his life. You also learn about some of the prophetic things that he had to say and the leadership that we need. Whether his cause will be open or not, I'm not quite sure. But joining me right now is the author, Michael Heinlein. And it's a delight to be able to just to tap into his knowledge of this great cardinal. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining me. Good afternoon.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I thank you for your book, by the way. I'm learning a lot more about Cardinal George. Met him many times. Had a great respect for his holiness, and that was very vivid. But I didn't realize the suffering that this man went through early. But it's kind of the hallmark of great saints, isn't it? So many of them often suffer early in their life. They suffer throughout their vocation. I know we don't have a whole lot of time together, but I want to give you the floor. Maybe introduce to those who may not know him what his life and his legacy was like, the heroic nature of his life, and then we could talk about some of the extraordinary things that he both said and did.
You know, Cardinal George was really, I think, one of the most important leaders in our American Catholic history. And it was a story that almost didn't happen because he, on his day of his first communion, wanted to become a priest. But in eighth grade, he was stricken with polio, which left him disabled. And his home archdiocese in Chicago told him that he could not be a priest there because of it. And so he joined the missionary oblates of Mary Immaculate, and the rest was history, as they say. He ended up at 35 becoming a provincial, and at 37 was elected vicar general of their congregation. And he ended up traveling the globe, visiting the various mission sites where the oblates served throughout the world. And then in 1990, he became a bishop, first in Yakima, Washington, and then later in Portland, Oregon, and then eventually in 1997, in God's providence, he came back to his hometown of Chicago to be the archbishop. But it was a narrative of suffering that really underscores the entire life of Cardinal George, because the Master, of course, tells us that we can't be a disciple unless we carry the cross. And all throughout his life, Cardinal George not only carried the cross, but it was a cross that got heavier and heavier with his illnesses, with his call to leadership, with the very many tasks and challenges that were put on his lap. And through it all, he not only carried it, but he carried it with a purpose, and he was able to truly unite himself to Christ's cross in such a way that he was able to bring life to all those that he encountered. He really was a tremendous pastor, a tremendous disciple, and he left a witness behind that I think anyone who wants to grow in their relationship with Christ can follow.
Let's do this, Michael. Let's take a few calls. If you encountered Cardinal George, if you experienced his holiness, if you've learned a valuable lesson from him, you can get in right now. I'm going to open the phones. The number's 888-914-9149. You can get in now. 888-914-9149. Let's start in Chicago, Illinois. Michael, Denise is calling in. Denise, good afternoon.
Thank you for bringing up this beautiful topic of Cardinal George. I served on a board for the Diocese of Chicago, the Chastity Initiative, which has the name's been changed, but it's still serving the diocese. He was instrumental in helping us get this program grow in the diocese. And I felt that he was truly the most brilliant bishop, but he was persecuted and he suffered in this diocese. Wow. And one of the things that he said, his famous quote was, "I will die in my bed."
Yes.
"And my predecessor will be in jail. And then his predecessor will die in the streets as a martyr."
And then his predecessor will pick up the shattered pieces, right? There's a final part to that,
right,
too, isn't there? Denise,
exactly.
Hold the thought. Don't go anywhere, because I want Michael to respond to that. That is one of those prophecies, one of those words that you know, he imparted with the faithful. And I always wondered about that. You know, he says he died in his bed, but his predecessor would I thought he said die in prison. I don't have it directly in front of me here. Share with us what he actually did say, Mike. I'm sure you know it, and what he said about the church in the end with his predecessor that would soon follow that.
Yeah, that was kind of a thought experiment that the cardinal carried out when he was talking to some priests who one of them got up and asked him, what's the worst that could happen for us who are faithful in this country, you know? And so he said, I'll die in bed, but the bishop who comes after me will die in jail, and his successor will die a martyr in the public square. But ultimately, his successor will be the one who picks up the shards of a broken society and brings wholeness and healing as the church has always done. So he left that on a message of hope. Oftentimes, that last part isn't quoted when this comes up, but the cardinal really wanted to make sure that the hope was in there. The cardinal understood our culture. The cardinal understood the trajectory of things in our country. He was so brilliant. He understood the history of the church, and so he knew that there were cycles to these sorts of things. And you know, history does repeat itself. But as a pastor, he was helping us to start thinking about what might lie ahead and how not to lose our faith in the midst of any darkness that we might be encountering.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Denise, your experience with him, I'll give you some final thoughts here, too, because I'm getting close to a break. I'll take a few more calls on the other side, but I'm going to give you final thoughts, Denise, so go right ahead.
Just that witnessing him as one of the most holy bishops and cardinals, he had the difficulty of polio, and then he had another illness, and he honestly suffered so much, but he was never impaired from speaking truth.
Wow.
And I'll never forget the media said to him once, Cardinal George, why aren't there more vocations to the priesthood?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there are many vocations to the priesthood. There are just not parents and people praying for them.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That I thought was a very powerful statement. He said it directly to the media.
Yeah. Well, Let's pick it up on the other side. I think it's a great comment. Denise, thank you. Michael, maybe we can talk about that. He was a man who rose to the heights of the church, becoming a wonderful cardinal, but almost didn't become a priest. That's the irony of it all. When we come back, we can take a look at what he had to say about that and much more. Stay with me. Our conversation continues right after this. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, Well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/forester.
Connecting you with the big guy upstairs. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, so good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. The chaplet is about 30 minutes away. We'll be sure and pray. Do yourself and do somebody else a favor. Tell them about it. Have them join you for it. We'll call upon the intercession of Cardinal Francis George, who, boy, was such a great shepherd for all the citizens of not just Chicago, what he did in terms of heading up the USCCB and so many other things. He was an example of a suffering servant and a man who I think we can learn a lot from. And if you want to be inspired by the priesthood, I mean, there's a lot of controversy out there, right? The priesthood has taken a lot of abuse. We had the clergy sexual abuse, and there's been a lot of other things that have gone down. You want to see what a true heroic priest is? You might want to read Glorifying Christ, The Life of Cardinal Francis E. George. It's available at osv.com. It's newly out. I'm actually speaking to the author, Michael Heinlein. And Michael, I want to go to the phones. Before we do, I want to pick it up on our last caller. He was not just a shepherd to the people of Chicago. He's not just their cardinal. But he really was, I think, an inspiration to so many of those new priests. It was a tremendous loss when he passed away. I know a great suffering in that particular diocese. But let's pick up on the priesthood, if you could. What did he say? What kind of influence did he have? How did he view the future of the priesthood?
You know, Cardinal George had a great love for priests. He put the priests of the Archdiocese of Chicago as top priority. If any of them ever needed to speak with him or see him, he was always there. He was truly a father. He put a lot of attention into Mundelein Seminary in the Archdiocese and wanted to make sure that priests were formed well and priests were formed to be holy and to be good pastors to their people. And beyond all that, beyond the governance aspect of how he ensured that we had good priests, he was a model for it himself. He was someone who showed us what it really meant to be a pastor who gave of himself for the love of his people. And so, you know, priesthood meant everything to him. He always wanted to be a priest from the day of his first communion. And his father was not all that excited about it, but he said to Cardinal George, if you want to be a priest, be a good one. And I think we can all say he listened to what his father said.
So following up on that, though, how did he respond then to this horrible sexual abuse crisis that rocked the church? Because I know he was in Chicago, I believe, at the time. You talk about priests, and again, I always try to qualify. Majority of priests never abuse the vows of their ordination. But for those who did, it hurt the entire priesthood. How did he lead through that? What was his reaction to it? What did he have to say?
You know, Cardinal George was really a great advocate for victims and survivors of abuse. Going back to when everything sort of blew up in 2002, and he knew that the church's very credibility was in question because of the clergy sexual abuse crisis. Yep. And he made it quite clear that we needed to have zero tolerance. He adopted that. He was a proponent of that. Even when those in the Holy See in Rome were saying that maybe zero tolerance was not the way we should go, he was very clear, and he argued and articulated for that because he knew that at the end of the day, we had to ensure the safety of children. And he was, you know, very much committed to seeing to the reforms that were necessary to make the church a place where children would be safe.
My guest today, Michael Heinlein, you can join us too if you would like to. The number's 888-914-9149. Just taking a look at the, what is this anniversary? Is it 8 years he's been passed away? How many years has he been passed away now?
Yes, he died on this day 8 years ago, April 17th, 2015.
That's amazing. A great loss for the church. He was a great leader, but an inspiration to all of us, and I know a very powerful intercessor. Joan is listening in North Lake, Illinois, and she's been waiting to join the conversation. Joan, hi, you're on the air with Michael Heinlein. Go right ahead.
Hi, Drew. God bless you. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Thank you.
I survived a very bad car accident on Good Friday. through the grace of God, I'm at home recuperating, but I have a beautiful story about our Cardinal George, our lovely Cardinal George. Are you ready?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yes.
We'd love to hear
it. I'm trying. I was at St. Maria ready for a Mass that our Cardinal George was saying, and he was coming down the aisle. He had his staff and his high cardinal hat on, and he almost made it to the altar. He was weak from his chemotherapy, and he fell flat on his face.
Oh,
my first reaction was to run out. I was in the front to try to help him. He got up all by himself, as brave as he is, and he made it to the pulpit. And the first thing he did was make a joke about he didn't eat his Wheaties at the morning.
That's awesome.
You know, that happened a lot with him. He because of the polio and the weakness in his leg, and then, as you say, with the cancer treatments, he fell a lot. When he was ordained a bishop in 1990, he said to his new flock in the Diocese of Yakima, Washington, "If I fall down, just pick me up and we'll go on together." And he did. He literally fell many times. But, you know, like Christ carrying his cross, he knew the end game. And he just got up and he kept pushing forward for the sake of his people.
You know, Mike, I often think of the characteristics of sanctity. I mean, what is it? What's the common denominators that run through the lives of so many saints? And one of those is suffering, without question. You know, they carry Christ. Cardinal George suffered. But I also look at humility. I mean, to have his polio, to fall down before all those people, your mitre and everything else with you, you know, struggling to get up in front of everyone. He exemplified both of those. The other one, of course, is a very deep prayer life, a union with the Lord. And there's many others, but you know, I can just see on the surface so many of these characteristics of sanctity. I know some people are saying, hey, his calls should be open. Anything happening on that front? Are they talking about maybe opening the calls for Cardinal George to become a saint?
Well, there are many people who would like to see that happen. Many, many people who are praying to him. I've spoken to many bishops who say they pray to him every day. And I think that if you look at, for instance, his grave where he's buried next to his parents in Des Plaines, Illinois, there are many signs of people visiting his grave, leaving things there, clearly seeking his intercession, seeing devotion to him. And I would certainly think that as time goes by, as his story gets to be known even more, that there's a reason that the church should consider a canonization clause for him.
Did he have any mystical experiences, any prophecy, any visions, anything that is not really public?
I have never heard of any necessarily. He, you know, embraced his suffering in such a way that he never spoke about it all that much. And so there could have been, but he, as you mentioned, his humility, you know, he just never would have shared that probably.
Yeah.
But he certainly had a very deep prayer life and certainly had a real union with the Lord that just radiated from him. And I think people who met him kind of felt mystical experiences and being in his presence.
Well, the Venerable Samuel Mazzucchelli, his cause is underway too, and you suggest people pray to Cardinal George. And I often say, hey, we should be praying to the blesseds. They need that miracle for sainthood or the Venerables. Venerable Mazzucchelli, this wonderful priest too, I mean, he suffered in ways nobody ever knew. He'd wear this penance chain and suffered a lot. And only upon the deathbed did people really find out, you know, the extent of his holiness and even his visions of the Mother of God. That's one of the reasons why I was asking. Let's go back to the phones. We'll take another call. Georgia, listening in Reno, Nevada. Hi, Georgia. Good afternoon. You're on with Michael Heinlein.
Okay, what I want to say is I wrote a letter to Cardinal George because I'm a born and bred Chicagoan and raised in the Catholic schools and taught in Catholic school. I mean, was taught by nuns in Catholic schools. And I read the New World because I always read the New World.
Okay.
Because that's a Chicago paper. And once he had written, Cardinal George had written a piece, and I thought he was incorrect. And in my bold 83 years, you know, I just take it on myself to correct cardinals and bishops and everybody else. Nobody really pays attention to me, but he wrote me back.
I love it. Georgia, I'm going to hold you on that thought there, but that's the kind of Cardinal that he was. I can't imagine. And think, I heard you, Mike, in an interview somewhere say that this man knew where he was going to be 6 months from now. I mean, every day, every hour is planned out. You got to be at this dinner, this confirmation, this mass. I mean, you really don't have your own life. And to sit down and to write to an 83-year-old lady who's complaining about something that you wrote, it's really speaks volumes about who this man was.
No, absolutely. That's the man he was. He made himself available to anyone that wanted a portion of his time. And he always wanted to see his mail. Those who worked with him knew that he had to see his mail, and he responded to everything personally. Even if he was just dictating the response and someone else typed it up, he was always responding personally to people. And up until he died, he was sending out letters even to people in Chicago media and thanking them for their time working with him during his years as Archbishop of Chicago.
That's awesome. Well, let's go back to the phones. John in Chicago, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. And my short story about, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfectly. Go right ahead.
Good. Thanks, Drew. And I was a part of pro-life in Chicago, and sometimes it's very difficult even to get the clergy to come out because they're very busy. And it's sort of controversial to be on the street. But we asked Cardinal George, would you come out? He did. He said a mass, and before we left the church, he said, now, outside there will always be, there can be, people that will be pro-choice, and they'll be looking for an argument. But whatever you do, stay in prayer. Don't be trapped into that. While we were walking, I'm not a prude. I've heard the worst possible language I've ever heard in my entire life being shouted, you know, right over to them. I thought, I'm going to step in front of Cardinal George so he won't hear it. Like, you know, he couldn't hear it. Of course he could. Yeah. And he stayed in prayer. He stayed out there with us all the time. And there were a couple other bishops that came out because he was there. Drew, while we were there, I was amazed. I actually saw somebody stop that was pregnant going into the clinic. Mm-hmm. And she turned around. She said, where do I go with the sidewalk counselors? So many people that day that were going in for abortions stopped, wow, went to the sidewalk counselors and say, what can I do to keep this baby?
Wow.
I think God That's rewarded amazing. Him because he put himself right on the line, front lines with us. And I know the buses that were passing on the street, you know, people were saying, what's going on with all these people? And there's Cardinal George with his head down, just praying away.
Wow.
It was so remarkable, this prelate of the church just standing out there with us on the front line saying, you know, let's pray for these people.
I love it. Hey, John, thank you for sharing that. I want Michael to follow up on that, but that's the power of this man's prayer and of his holiness and of his witness. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, his pro-life legacy is very rich. He was incredibly dedicated to the unborn. And one of the most moving things, I think, that's in my book and also a photo of it, is when he presided over a burial of many unborn fetuses in a Catholic cemetery in the Archdiocese of Chicago. And he has his hands laying there on the wooden box that was constructed to contain their bodies. And as someone asked him, who worked for him, what was it exactly that was in your mind? He said, I was asking them to pray for me. And I can't think of a more pro-life witness than that.
You're not kidding. I only have a moment or two left. There's a lot of people I want to talk to, but let me give you some final thoughts on him as well. What's your big takeaway? What perhaps impressed you the most? And finally, how can we get the book to learn much more about his extraordinary life?
The thing that I take away personally is that I am, you know, renewed in my own call to discipleship by his story, that he was someone who was so authentic, filled with integrity and perseverance and every other virtue. And he never let go of the cross of Christ. He carried it, and he did it all with a smile on his face for the love of his people. And I think that that's a story that can inspire any of us who want to become holy ourselves. And, you know, he lent all of his gifts and talents, his brilliance. He was he had two doctorates. He was one of the smartest men ever to be a bishop in this country. And at the end of the day, though, he always knew what mattered most, and that was being available to his people. And it's a real rich legacy for all of us to celebrate and to imitate.
Yeah, well, the country was blessed to have him, the citizens, his flock there in Chicago, of course, and Relevant Radio, who without really his support, I don't know if we'd be here today. So, Michael, I'm grateful for your work, too, writing the book. It's called Glorifying Christ, The Life of Cardinal Francis E. George, OMI. And you can get that at osv.com. If you want to read an inspiring book, maybe you've got a priest you want to share this with, or a seminarian, or just want to be inspired yourself. It's available now. Hey, Michael, thank you. Look forward to talking with you once again.
Great privilege. I look forward to it. Thank you.
That's Michael Heinlein. I got to take a very short pause here. I'm going to be back in just a second, and love to hear from you, too. If you want to join me, the number to get in, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Divine Mercy Sunday was yesterday. Let's talk about that for a minute. I'd love to hear about your experience. Was it your first Divine Mercy Sunday? What did you encounter and experience on that day? Right, I'll have to share with you what happened to me. You can get in right now, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy and invite them into the loving arms of Jesus. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Somehow it doesn't mean very much unless you've got someone to share it with.
This is the Drew Mariani Show, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Coming up next.
Yeah, ma'am. My producer, Maggie, was just talking to Michael Heinlein during the break, and he said he actually just did that interview with us from the graveside of Cardinal George. So our heart goes out to you, Michael, and I know that you love the Cardinal very much, and we'll call upon Cardinal George's intercession as we go ahead and begin our Chaplet of Divine Mercy, which is about 10 minutes away. Hey, I'd love to hear from you, too. I'd like to find out about Divine Mercy Sunday. What was your experience like? I'll share very quickly. I haven't even talked to Maggie about this yet. I was planning to go to a church known as the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy, where they were blessing these giant images. And the priest there wrote a book called A Mother's Plea. His name's Father Anthony Bush. I've had him on the program many times in the past. And he wanted to create in the heart of our country a sanctuary to Divine Mercy. The National Shrine is on the East Coast. It's in a place called Stockbridge, Massachusetts. But he wanted in the heart of the nation to have a sanctuary, not only for the city of Chicago, people who were going to be coming and going, but for anyone passing through wanted to be there. And he had this great vision for it. And I was there, maybe it was 15 years ago when they consecrated that sanctuary. And if you ever have a chance, it is one of the most beautiful monstrances you'll ever lay your eyes on. It was actually constructed by the late vice postulator for St. Faustina's cause. His name was Father Seraphim Mikulenko, with these humble, bowing, giant angels in front of this giant monstrance. And there's so much imagery and message behind this. It's quite incredible. I didn't get a chance to do that day. And normally I'm on the air. Normally, you know, the network here says, hey, could you, you know, lead the Chaplet of Divine Mercy on the Feast of Mercy for everybody? I know it's a Sunday, but could you do it? And Father Rocky will lead a prayer service, and I'll share a little bit and go ahead and I'll pray that chaplet. Well, the way our schedules worked out this year, Father couldn't do it, and they asked me, and very selfishly, I just wanted to pray. I'm sorry. I said to my wife, I'm going to pass this year. I just want to spend time with the Lord. So I searched around my area, right? And I wanted to find a parish. I was surprised. A lot of people didn't have Divine Mercy services. The priest who I went to Divine Mercy service for, he says he asked his congregation in the morning, raise your hands if you know about Divine Mercy or the life of St. Faustina or the Feast of Mercy. Do you know anything about it? He says less than 10% of his congregation raised their hands in the first four masses. I happened to do a search, and I found out that they were having confession and mass and a Eucharistic service later. He asked that group of people. Of course, the numbers were much higher. So I stumble. I look all over. A lot of churches only had maybe the chaplet. I wanted to go to confession. I wanted to receive the Lord, and I wanted to pray. So my wife and I get there around 1 o'clock, and we have an hour. There were so many people. One guy hearing 60, 70, 80 confessions. I felt so bad for him. I prayed so hard for him. We were able to get in line. They handed out numbers. And if there's any priest listening to me right now, I want to give you a little bit of advice, or anybody that does this on Lent or Divine Mercy Sunday. As we walked into the church, somebody came up and said, "You're going to go to confession?" I said, "Yeah, I'd like to." Here. She ripped off number 41. That was my place in the confession line, 41, right? I think it's a great idea, though, because then they called you up. Okay, 1 through 10, 10 through 20, you know, they ten, you didn't have to stand in line all the time. You knew where you're going, and it was really a great idea. Number those people for confession, all right? That way people don't have to get stressed out. They don't have to, sometimes they got to confess the sin of impatience, right? Because I'm sitting in confession. Why is that lady taking so long? I'm like, Drew, stop it. That's not the attitude you should have, you know, but I thought it was a great idea. So you know, we get there while we go to confession. We're able to pray. Mass is an hour. It's beautiful. I brought a relic, a first-class relic of St. Faustina that I was given by at her beatification. And there was veneration of the blessed of the first-class relic of St. Faustina, Mass. Then afterwards, beautiful music service where readings from the diary took place and the Lord was exposed in adoration. I spent 3.5 hours just praying that day, just praying. I can't tell you how many chaplets I prayed on that day, but it was so good for my spirit. And I want you to know in particular, there was they prayed the chaplet one time in song, and it was a much longer version. I offered that particular chaplet for you. I offered it for those who pray with me every day. Maggie, you were in that with Joseph, all of us here. You were prayed for in a very direct way. But what a great day. I loved it. I got so much out of it. And, you know, next year, I think somebody wrote to me. They were kind of upset that we didn't have the chaplet on the air. But Maggie, what did you do?
So I was away this weekend. I had my bachelorette weekend with a bunch of girlfriends. Yeah. And we went to New Buffalo, Michigan, and just kind of got out in the quiet. Wow. And enjoyed some time. And they all know that I love Divine Mercy. So yeah. my best friend Annie found a church nearby that was doing a sung version of the chaplet. Wow. And confessions and mass. And so we went to that. But on the ride back into Chicago, one of my other friends was like, I really want to take part in this day. I don't know what's going on. So I said, you could meet me at St. Stanislaus. So we went to St. Stanislaus, and wow, there were a lot of people there. And I got an image blessed I really wanted to get blessed. There were a number of people that came up and talked to me about you, and they still remember when you were at the initiation of that image, the blessing of that image. Yeah, yeah.
So that's great. So they recognized you.
I guess so.
That's because you're on video now.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I was also wearing a jacket that said Mrs. Carosa.
That's so great. Well, that was awesome. So you really got a lot of grace on that day, too.
We'll have
to catch up. I know you and I haven't had a lot of time to talk today, but that's...
Yeah.
What a great day. That's fantastic.
Oh, it was so beautiful.
That's a beautiful power. You've seen the monstrance there, right?
Oh, it's breathtaking. It's unique, though, because I've never seen the Virgin Mary depicted in red. Mm-hmm. It's very striking because it took me by surprise the first time I went in there, and I was like, is that supposed to be Mary? I'm assuming it is because she's the Ark of the Covenant, but she's not in blue.
Yeah. I was down in South America and I bought a statue where she was in red. It's one of my favorite ones.
Oh.
One of my favorite ones. But you're right. There's symbolism in that too. As Father Seraphim,
I'm sure,
put her into that.
I didn't know he designed it.
He designed it. Yeah. He worked with the artist on that. And that church has an anointing. I'm sorry, that has just a powerful, powerful anointing. So if you ever get a chance, check that out. Josh is in Belgrade, Montana. Josh, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. I just wanted to comment and say that this Divine Mercy Sunday was my first for me and my wife. We were both confirmed on the Easter Vigil Mass as Catholics. And
wow.
So I experienced a huge sense of peace and relief both times, from my first Eucharist to yesterday at Divine Mercy Sunday. And it was just a massive sense of peace and fullness in my spirit.
Isn't it amazing? What were you before you became Catholic? What was your faith?
I was Protestant.
So what, you know, when you experience the sacrament of the Eucharist, not only when you, first of all, congratulations on coming into the church,
but I
just find Divine Mercy Sunday, the last day of the octave of Easter, when you're able to receive the Lord like that, I almost feel the grace, can't you? I mean, what an extraordinary gift.
Yeah.
What's your heart filled with now that you can receive the Eucharist? What do you feel? What do you long for?
Just, I feel the closest to God I've ever felt. I wow. feel almost like that childlike wonder and awe and love toward God, where all I want to do, if I could, would be to go to Mass every single day and receive the Eucharist. But because of work, I really can't, but I go as often as I possibly can now. And it's just, yeah.
That's Josh, that's a foretaste of heaven. I mean, that longing, that love, that desire to be in union with the Lord. One day we'll all have that. Congratulations, brother. I'm so glad to hear that. And gosh, I wish you could get the Mass every day. A lot of graces in the Eucharist. We'll pray the chaplet on the other side. Stay with me. I'll be right back.